Hi, I'm John.
Hi, I'm Olivia.
And I'm Genevieve.
And this week we've watched Harbinger. And now we're going to argue about whether it's going to make us quit Star Trek.
I'm deeply upset. I
I don't think
think
I pronounced that word right.
I actually I
Harbinger.
don't know.
Harbinger.
Harbinger, I
Har
think.
No, it's, it
Is it
hasn't got it
Harbinger?
hasn't got it doesn't have a second eye.
Can we get a
It's
Collins Dictionary
Harbinger.
definition of that?
It's like a bad omen, right? That's what it means.
Yeah, but
Like
how is
someone
it
who brings you
pronounced?
bad news.
Yeah, Harbinger. Yeah.
Oh,
Harbinger of
no.
bad, like a harbinger of bad news.
Yeah. Or a
I don't like that
Harbinger, which is a
spelling. I'm
man who
going to
drinks too
reject that
much.
spelling.
Yeah, Harbinger. Okay.
I think if
This
this episode had had a graphic sex scene between Malcolm and Hayes, it would have been less obscene than what I
But
just
Olivia,
watched.
it did.
I mean,
No,
it
it would have been less obscene if they had shown full everything.
This was like,
Okay, wait, Olivia, did you have you finished Enterprise? Like, have you like watched Enterprise all the way through? Okay.
sorry, suddenly I
Okay.
can't hear. Suddenly I can't hear.
That's fine.
Crazy.
I just want context. Because last time we recorded, you had not. And I assumed that you had not, but I just didn't want to see if that changed.
Olivia still
You
has
can cut
season
this out of
one
the
series in the
podcast.
world. They're gonna be like, they left. 3, like 6 months, 9 months, and she still hasn't finished
You
Enterprise.
still haven't
Okay,
watched Most
the fourth
Strange New
season
Worlds
is
either.
good.
I just don't want to see my baby boy Trip become a war criminal. And Archer was terrifying this episode. He looked like the joy's out of his eyes. He's not okay. He's a husk of a man. What happened to him?
9/11.
Yeah, that's a good point.
They're pretty clear about that.
9/11 may be this horny. I don't know what I'd do.
Are we jumping right into the 9/11 aspect?
No,
Do
we
you want
whole
to start
thing
with
is
like
the
a summary of the
9/11
episode?
aspect. But that was just the only feeling I have about this episode.
We need to jump into the opening scene, which was like a Quentin Tarantino shot, because that was very unnecessary. Straight close up of the feet. Why? Didn't need to see it.
Yeah, we started off with feet and forgettable white women.
How dare you?
A commonality of Star Trek and Tarantino films.
Listen, Commander, what's her name? Is
Corporal.
Corporal, sure. Is her name Amanda?
Corporal Amanda Cole, which is like one
Amanda
syllable.
Cole.
It's one syllable away from being a Bond girl.
Where
I don't know which syllable, but it's one.
did
Her
she
name is
come
Cole because
from?
you know that she's hard. Blah. She's hard.
Well,
She's a
okay, Olivia, I don't
sensitive
know.
woman.
Okay, wait, Olivia, how far did you get in Enterprise? And this is not a judgment. This is just a how much do we need to fill you in?
I don't know. Trip had just started committing
Did
war
9/11
crimes.
happen?
Yeah. Trip had just started committing war
Okay.
crimes. It was like
So the
it got
reason,
to him.
yeah. Yeah, the reason that they're all there is because they're the military and the military is on the ship in case they like meet the terrorists. Because Starfleet is not a military.
Yeah, sure.
They're like Marines is like I assume like what they're supposed to
Yeah,
be. Like where it's
which is
like
why
the
they're all
Navy
massive
exists and the
assholes.
Marines. Sorry, John.
I said that's they obviously Marines because that's why they're all massive assholes.
Okay, can I just like share a hot take up front?
Oh dear.
What's the general, what's the major's name?
Hayes.
Major Hayes. I think he's right. I don't
No,
think
he
he's
is
being an
right.
asshole. I think Malcolm's the only one being an asshole here.
Yeah,
You
but
know
Malcolm's being
why?
sensitive because he's fucking having a crisis.
You
That's
know why
clear.
Hayes is right? You know the most important Hayes is, reason Hayes is right? Malcolm's job is to run the ship's weapons. Why the
Why?
f he should not
Right.
be bothered with running
One.
boarding parties and
Wait.
hand-to-hand fights when his job is to run fire control. Those are separate jobs.
John, and I want you to say now the most insane thing you've done when you've had a crush on someone. Have you just been in the room? Just try to make yourself be available to them in the room. When you've
I
had a little
haven't
crushy crush,
ever
you can't
physically.
control them.
I mean, yes, but I've never, not on the clock. Well,
Let's get
okay,
some real
carry on. I've
exposé.
had a busy summer. So we get a sort of last time on Star Trek, which takes 5 minutes. They've gone to fight the terrorists and the sphere, and Major Hayes has been annoying, and Trip Tucker got cloned, and there was a simulated clone of him they needed for his organs, and the clone died. But before the clone died, the clone told T'Pol that Trip loves her or something.
Yeah.
And then we get
Have you covered that episode?
No, we haven't. And I really want to, because it's absolutely
Let me do it.
How many times does Trip get cloned? No, we have.
Now, have we done
How many times is there another Trip in the episode?
Have we done the one? Have we done Similitude?
Yes.
Fuck, we have.
I thought we just talked about it in the 2 weeks episode, but I don't know if we actually covered it specifically.
I'm gonna look it up. The only way I know by scrolling through our Spotify.
Like, we talked about it pretty extensively, but it was in the 2 weeks conversation, I thought. But I could be wrong.
I feel that you put me fully through. I remember watching the episode.
Yeah, but someone made me watch the episode. As far as I can work out, we've never done Civil. We've done Cogenitor, which is the one with the sex slaves.
Sure.
That must have been my personal endeavors into Enterprise. I'm still traumatized. Cogenitor is one of the worst episodes.
Cogenitor's got Andres Cotulas in it, and it's still terrible. Anyway, let's not get distracted.
Like, it had an okay idea, but awful execution.
So the Voyager problem. Well, basically, that's the Star Trek problem.
Anyway, this episode.
So, they're doing neuro pressure. Literally, the stinger of this is just Trip having a snog he didn't like.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that. Because, okay, that scene fascinates me. And maybe it's just because it's like... The thing about Enterprise is I am biased, but I think of all of the Star Treks, Enterprise is maybe the most of its time. And that's a personal opinion.
If Enterprise is any more of its time, Russell Brand would be.
The original series is like critically 60s, and like, you know, Next Generation is critically 80s. But like, I hate to keep bringing it up, but 9/11, it is just like so early 2000s. It's like a little time capsule of a TV show. And I do think that, and like, obviously, the reason that they do it, have like her be like a surprise kiss for him, is number one, he is in love with T'Pol. But number two, I do think it's like interesting the way that they play it, because it's a scene that gets played in a lot of TV shows and movies from this time where like one person does a surprise kiss. But first of all, it's like the woman doing a surprise kiss to a man, which is like number one interesting.
Feminism.
Thank you. But also, he doesn't like, it's not one of the situations where she kisses him and he's like first surprised, but then he starts kissing her back. He like doesn't, he's like not uninto it, but he's like taken aback for sure. He's like definitely like unsure of what's happening and like not 100% sure that he likes it.
Yeah.
And he does sort of like call her out on it and be like,
he accepts it because there's a part of his ego that's like, well, someone likes me.
And like, if I'm on like a deep space voyage with, you know, the same 70 people, like I get it. But like, I do think it's interesting that he does do the like, he doesn't immediately like start kissing her back. He's like dumbfounded for a second, which I do think is like an interesting thing that they chose to do. And I don't know if like that was a script choice or that was like a Connor choice, but I do think
it's different.
Like, is a strong word for how it played out. It's different. It is like, you know, an interesting way to play it. And I do think Connor Trainor does this like very good like smirk. And he does it like pretty consistently throughout the series, but it's this like smirk that he does when he's like, I don't like this, but it's interesting. And he does that same smirk. And it's like, it's definitely like him trying to like embody this like Southern good old boy. But I do kind of like it. But yeah, she kisses him. And he was like, that was, and the word he uses was like surprising. Or something like that.
And then we get country and western in space. The guitar plays, the music swells, and we commit war crimes in the Delta Quadrant. Well, Alpha Quadrant. Yeah, whatever. I don't care. So what we immediately cut to, like, Archer, the plot stinger of this episode is Archer wants more training done, and Malcolm's
Is
really
it,
pissy
I mean, is
about
Archer
it.
the one that asked for it?
Well, Archer tells Malcolm it's happening based on Major Hayes saying he wants to do it. And then they have the horniest walk and talk I've seen since season one of The West Wing.
It's just absurd.
My God.
Just
And I think it's
absurd. important to note that this show is like concurrent to The West Wing.
know, which doesn't feel right, but nonetheless, it is.
This
So they
exists in a
walk.
West Wing world.
But yeah,
Like, I
they
don't want to
walk.
be toxic, but two people that hate each other that much, like, it's not hate at that point. There's too much anger there. There's too much passion there. It's creeping me out. Fucking get it over
Kiss
with. I was
already.
already pissed off. I was pissed
And
off
they're
5 seconds
arguing
into
about
their first interaction that I've
mornings.
seen of them.
Yeah, Malcolm's letting him know he's all loosened up and well oiled in
He
the
basically said,
evenings.
I'm free Tuesday and Friday. Like, come get it.
Well, okay, like, oh, I understand. Like, I grew up, don't find my family or anything, but I grew up like 4 miles away from the Naval Academy, in the US. So, I grew up around Navy men, and like, I am aware of the head butting that happens between like Army and Navy, Navy and Marines, or whatever. But like, number one, like, there is an animosity, but Navy and Marines do have to work together. And obviously, I've never been in the Navy. And like, there is this notion that like Marines are a bunch of meatheads or whatever. But like, I get it. But at the same time, like, the anxiety specifically, where he's like, Major Hayes wants my job.
Also, side note,
That seems insane to me.
that's something very important. Major Hayes is his boss.
Yeah, like Major
Major,
outranks
a major is equivalent to a lieutenant
Lieutenant.
command, is a lieutenant commander. If he was Captain Hayes, I can understand it.
Right. Like, I just don't understand why he thinks. And, like, in my opinion, it was like very clear. And I know that they have to be a conflict on the show. And I know that also Malcolm Reed is like a crazy person with like the world's tightest asshole. But,
Genevieve,
like,
he's just British.
Well,
yeah, the
he's too
world's
British.
tightest asshole. He's like, if they like distilled Britishness down to like a liqueur and like let it fester for 100 years, like that's what Malcolm Reed is.
It was very triggering
But
to see him again.
I do appreciate that, like, Star Trek, British people are either A, not from England, actually, they're actually from France. B, are evil, or C, are Dr. Bashir. I think that's it. Are there nice British people that aren't Dr. Bashir? I can't think of any.
Scotty.
No, it doesn't count.
Scotty is not, I'm not giving you Scotty. Scotty's
Okay, I'm
Scottish.
sorry
He's not
if
English.
you're gonna say British,
That's fair.
Scotty
I
counts.
misspoke.
All right.
We
I
can't claim
misspoke.
Scotty.
You,
Here's
I
the
mean,
thing, is Malcolm
unfortunately,
Reed.
we have to.
Malcolm
Freedom.
Reed is British, but he's very specifically English.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But
Anyway.
like the like okay, also like they exist in different like cores of the military. Like, it's not, is it even like a reasonable possibility that even if Hayes, like, because in my opinion, it's very clear that Hayes does not want his job. Like, to
No,
me,
Ace
it's
does
very
not want his
clear that
job.
like Hayes is just there to do his job. But like, even if there was like a weird rivalry, like, number one, they're in space. Like, they're in deep space without deep space communication. Like, they cannot communicate with Earth. So it's not like, Archer's sending back reports and like someone at Starfleet Command is like, actually, you should replace Malcolm with Major Hayes. But also, they're like complete, like, you can't, like, it's not like a one for one. It's not like they're gonna transfer him.
Yeah.
Two, he outranks him. And three, like, Malcolm keeps going on. And like, to be clear, I don't think this is bad writing because I do think this is like consistent with Malcolm's character, which is that he's a little
100%.
shit.
Yeah.
But like, and I think that like overall the episode treats it with like the correct amount of Malcolm as being a crazy person. But like, the fact that Malcolm was just walking around being like, I've met that kind of man all my life. And I'm like, I'm so sorry that, like, so many military men have hurt you and you have, like, deep-seated daddy issues, Malcolm. But, like, not every British person in authority is, like, trying to take your job. And also, they are in a war. Like, and, like, in the episode, they, like, make a point that the trainings are effective. Like, I don't know why he can't just be like, I'm the ship guy, you're the groundwork guy.
Listen, like, we're not going to expect any, like, logical behavior from Malcolm. He's deeply broken, Matt. He's gone. He's beyond hell.
Sorry, can I just...
The only thing that could fix it is a dick in his ass.
Are you drinking a beer out of a cupboard?
Yes.
It has a cozy.
Is that so it doesn't count as an open container or something?
To keep it cold. Do you not have beer koozies in England?
No, I just drink beer quickly. Jesus.
No, I didn't think.
Okay, I'm sorry. I like my beverages to be crisp. You have canned koozies in England?
No, we just drink beer quick. The beer is not around long enough.
No, no. It's that you like your beer warm, and it's insane.
We drink lager here. Also, warm, like a good cask ale is good. And I will not take slander against cask ale. Because you can have a car, you can buy a pint of cask ale, and 45 minutes later, if you haven't finished it, it still tastes the same.
I only drink beer when Penny poisons me, so I have no stake in the game.
Like recorder like ciders, Olivia. You're not allowed to take part in this conversation.
Whatever. I'm sorry I'm not a proper geezer at the pub.
Here's the thing, is in the US it gets hot sometimes.
Never heard of her.
So, never heard. Do you have a heat wave? Like,
it is still 20 degrees Celsius at the end of September.
It's the end of days.
It's mad.
It's almost October and it's 26 degrees. We're going to die.
It's not 26. It's just
It was 26 a few days ago. How many degrees is that?
That's
Let me put my thing in Celsius.
Listen, it's too hot for the UK. That's all I know. Degrees in Fahrenheit.
It is damp, though, so that's nice.
78.8.
It's supposed to be freezing by now. 24 degrees here in sunny Wisconsin.
It's not gonna go below. It's gonna be 19 degrees until the second week of like.
That's a little bit more. Well, still too high, but it's fine.
I own too much wool for this weather.
Oh my gosh, Genevieve! John was wearing wool the entire heat wave. I just want that on the record.
I know, it's so upsetting.
Feel faint to be around. John, you look lovely, but I was concerned that we were both going to die.
Oh, well,
the number of times that man has posted a like tweed suit and like wool sweater vest when I know for a fact it's over and I'm going to use Fahrenheit 80 degrees.
You can speak to the people I was in Vegas with, but there was a day where I did wear a tweed waistcoat.
Insanity. John, it was August.
That's like medically unsafe.
And a tie.
John.
We'll pray for you. John. We'll pray for you.
Okay. John, I don't know if you went to like, did you go to downtown Las Vegas at all?
No, I'm civilized.
Did you leave?
Downtown Las Vegas is cute. But they have like a cover over like the entirety of downtown. Because it's so hot that if they didn't, no one would leave the house like 6 months out of the year.
But it's so hot there. The whole place is an abomination against God. So I didn't go outside. I went outside for like a maximum of like, I don't think I was outside for more than an hour the whole time I was there.
That seems smart, actually, for many reasons.
Anyway, Star Trek.
Star Trek. Where were we?
It's all Star Trek.
So talking about Major Hayes.
So they're being horny and then they find fluidic space. Which looks weird, The space is fluid. We don't like that. It fucks up the ship, but then they save a guy who is actually then really, really pissy about being saved. And also, he looks like...
burnt broccoli?
I was going to say, he looks like he's going to trigger a phobia in me I didn't know I had.
I just kind of want to, like, pick off his skin, you know?
Yeah.
Like, when, like, mud, like, dries on your skin and it cracks... And you like scrape it off and it's kind of satisfying. Scab, I want to do that to his whole body.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there. That's where I am. I don't like that.
Okay, let's talk about the guy. I would like to talk about the guy.
The guy. What about the guy?
Okay, so I have a lot of feelings about the guy. So number one, like, overall, season three of Enterprise is a mess, but it's my mess, you know? And, like, I can appreciate it was doing something. And, like, we can talk about execution, but I do think it struck a good balance overall in terms of having both episodic episodes and a season-long arc. Like, I think modern Star Trek has, like, tried to do that a lot. Like I think that Strange New Worlds is a good example of someone trying to do that. Can I just say something
very important?
Yes.
The guy, the alien guy, is the same actor as Kira's dad.
Oh, that's funny. Thank you for that.
Okay.
But I think that season three of Enterprise, and I know that part of this is that it has like 24 rather than 10 episodes. But I feel like modern Star Trek is really going for this, like each episode, especially like Strange New Worlds in particular, and to a certain extent, Lower Decks. But and I think Lower Decks does it relatively successfully, where they have like an overarching plot for the season, but like each episode does kind of stand on its own as like an individual story. And I think it did strike a good balance of that. And I think it part of the reason it was able to do that is that they went to a, like, they made the setting be so much of the story. Like, the fact they were in the expanse, there was all these like anomalies and whatnot. And I think the concept of there are these people from another dimension, another type of space that are trying to come to us. And so they are artificially making this space, you know, something that we can't inhabit because they can't inhabit our space. Like, I think that's an interesting concept to begin with. And the idea, and I think it makes a logical sense that they like take a prisoner and they send them in there like an experiment or something, assuming that we believe his story, which like, I don't know if we're supposed to, but that makes sense to me. Also, when he comes out, he has all these wires, like, not wires. They're like fiber optic cables attached to him. And I feel like that was a real mainstay of Star Trek for like a decade. And we've lost the fiber optic cables all over people.
The feature is now. We've got CGI now. We don't need fiber optic cables. We just have the worst looking nanoprobes you've ever seen.
Yeah, no, bring back fiber optic cables. Just put some those like lights that they give children at like fairs and stuff that light up on the tips. Give them that. And I feel like when people talk about Archer, and specifically the war criminal aspect,
this is what like, they're number talking one, about.
Number one, I think it was an interesting choice. And like, I think it's important to remember, and this is controversial, Star Trek isn't real. It's not a real thing that's happening to real people. It's a story.
It happens to me every day, and it's painful, actually.
And I just think that, like, I, in some ways, would rather have a captain that occasionally does fucked up shit that I disagree with, but, like, makes sense from a story and narrative perspective, than I want, like, a perfect shiny Blorbo, you know? I don't necessarily need each of my captains to be, like, the pinnacle of, you know, Star Trek values.
I don't want a boring bitch like Jean-Luc Picard. I want someone who will commit a little murder on the side.
A little murder?
There's an annoying merged bitch around. You know?
Well, the main problem with Archer committing war crimes is not that it happens. It's that they don't interrogate it. It's just like, oh, he's edgy. He'll do anything to save us. And they don't interrogate whether or not that was a good decision in the long run.
Okay. Counterpoint, I don't disagree that they don't interrogate it enough, but I do think they at least think ever like the famous example is when he like it's like the torture episode where like he locks the alien in an airlock for information and like, you know, sucks out the air. And like at least in that episode, like people are like, hey, that's like kind of fucked up. And he does brush it off. But like I do think, and like Enterprise also exists in a pre-Federation world. Like, it's our first long-distance starship, and I think particularly for the story that Enterprise is telling, which is that, like, season one, they start off and they're like, this is our first long-distance ship. Like, all of our other ships can really only go to, like, the next star system or so. Like, they don't these, like, long-haul trips to Vulcan and stuff. They take months at a time. So, like, this is, like, and, like, they're, like, so optimistic and gung-ho. And, like, the first two seasons are sort of Archer learning that, like, that attitude has its consequences. Like, it's a good idea, but, like, especially when you're not the strongest. Like, the Star Trek of particularly, like, Next Generation and above, with, like, with that, the exception of, like, the big bads. Generally speaking, when, like, the Enterprise meets someone, they are expected to, like, you know that they are, we have, like, the Federation behind us, we have, you know, all these resources and everything like that. Whereas, like, Archer doesn't. Like, they are very frequently the underdogs and, like, the less powerful one in almost every alien encounter that they have. And so I think it is, like, a natural evolution that by, like, season three, particularly after this attack on Earth, Archer is like, hey, maybe those ideals that I had are, like, bad, and maybe this, like, other way that I thought was bad originally is, like, actually what I need to do. And, like, not to say that I agree with his choices, but I do think it's, like, a natural evolution of the character, and, like, realistic, like, not to put too fine a point on it, but, like, particularly in Enterprise, Star Trek is very much, like, USA coded. Well, like, it's definitely for an American audience.
This could all be true, but it still fails to answer the crucial question of if we're meant to think that these are the good guys, why are we interrogating their bad decisions? Especially in a media environment with Trek, where we are absolutely expecting what the captain does to be the gospel. Like, the captain's decisions are the decisions the audience are meant to agree with.
But I guess that's my point, is I don't necessarily think that that is necessary. And I think that's how a lot of Star Trek is written. But I don't think it necessarily has to be true. I think, like, in real life, a lot of military people commit a lot of things. Crimes and, like, do a lot of things that I would personally disagree with. And I think a lot of people, if they, like, really, like, knew everything that happened in war, would disagree with. That being said, and, like, and it's also, like, the first ship. And I do think, not, again, I don't want to seem like I'm, like, agreeing with Archer's actions. And I don't think, I agree with you that they're not, like, interrogated enough, but I also think that it is realistic that, like, in this situation where everyone else on the ship is, like, in the same basic position that he is, where they're, like, also, like, scared and alone, like, they're the only ship like them that's out there, and they're, like, worried about this existential threat of complete annihilation by this unknown threat, like, and he is the captain, you know. I think it's reasonable to assume from a narrative perspective, not like a moral one, but from a narrative perspective, that they wouldn't be questioning him that much. And also, for most of these decisions, there's not necessarily another person there. Like, it's not like the entire crew knows every decision that Archer is making. Like, for this episode, for example, it's really only Dr. Phlox. And, like, Dr. Phlox, throughout the episode, obviously he's,
a bit,
like,
too chill with it. I don't know what I've missed, but Phlox not putting any fight up with that was like, oh, we're just going to bend the morals.
But here's the other point, Genevieve, which is that all these contrivances that mean that Archer can get away with it are ones created by the writers, which basically comes down to the fact that the writers want to allow him to do terrible things in a terrible situation to prove a point that sometimes you do terrible things in a terrible situation without really interrogating whether or not that is the right thing to do. So you can't really say, oh, you know, they couldn't have really got to because no one else would have positioned a sword, because the writers created a position, where there's no one around to offer criticism. The writers made it a choice that T'Pol wasn't in the room when he did a terrible thing to turn around and go, what the fuck are you doing? Or that Trip wasn't there as Archer's friend to go, aren't we losing our humanity doing things like this? That is a choice the writers made not to do, not to interrogate.
It is a writing choice, but I also don't think it's a writing choice that I don't think takes me out of it, because I think, assuming that it's like a realistic show, there are going to be choices that he makes without, like, the choices the captain makes are not going to be like completely observable by everyone, I guess, is what I'm saying. Like, it definitely is a choice that the writers are making. I'm not saying that's not true. It's not like, again, Star Trek isn't real. Like, every choice that they make is from the writers. Also, and like, do I wish they'd examined it more? Sure. I don't think the fact that he did the things is the problem as much as like how they handled the aftermath.
But he doesn't seem fine. It looks like the light's gone out in his eyes. As someone who's been like hopping past Enterprise episodes, he's a broken man. He's not okay.
I guess that's sort of what I'm saying, is that like, it's very clear that this is like a man in desperation. And not that that makes it okay, but to me, that is framing it as like, this is not the choice you should be making.
He seems compromised. And,
okay,
and so there's a
okay,
level
bear
of
with me here. Bear with me here. Bear with me here.
I'm scared.
How wrong was he in this episode specifically? Like,
depriving medical aid to a prisoner of war is a severe violation of the Geneva and Hague Convention.
Wait, were they gonna? Right. Wait, no. Wait, were they not depriving him of aid, or were they just not mercy killing him? I was confused.
No, they weren't deprived. They were depriving him of medical aid and medical aid. Yeah, so that's a severe violation.
That's at the beginning. I thought he was dying.
Well, no, he is dying, and they are trying to save him, but it's that they're not letting him be unconscious. They want him to be conscious.
No, there's a bit literally where Phlox tries to give him more sedative, more like, what's the word, pain meds, and Archer withholds it to get information out of him.
Yeah.
I assume that was to keep him conscious, but I could definitely be wrong.
I mean, my general...
if he said sedative, it was like if you give him more pain meds, he will like no longer be able to answer my questions. Because he will like no longer be conscious.
That still
like,
counts as depriving a prisoner of war, a prisoner of medical assistance.
That's true. Okay, but listen. It wasn't
Who
right.
Among us?
It was wrong. It was very wrong.
Genevieve, the episode before this, he literally grew a test tube baby to kill it.
And we're not talking about the test tube baby that we grew to kill it. We're not talking about we can talk about that if you want. That's all we're talking about. I'm on this episode where there is a like existential threat. And listen, I'm not saying it was the right thing to do. What I'm saying is, in the fog of war, we all
in the fog of
make
war.
Mistakes.
You're done.
This is Genevieve. How have you turned into Rush Limbaugh? I just want to know what happened in the last 6 months that turned you into space Rush Limbaugh.
I could simply accept.
Did you get kicked in the head by a horse?
Of course, they'd make these mistakes.
I mean, the general.
I just think.
This would all be very true if the whole point of Star Trek wasn't that people were improving.
Okay, but I think Enterprise, to me, gets a little bit of a pass on that one, because it is a prequel that, like, is at this, like, it's at the tipping point. Like, Enterprise, the things that Archer and the crew have to do in Enterprise is what causes them to be like, we need to be better, we need to form the Federation.
But they
like,
never interrogate that. We just have to believe that that's what happens.
I'll grant you that. And like, you know,
John?
If we'd had a fifth season.
Yeah, that's true, probably. Anyway, Manny, what's his name? Manny Koto was the best of this. But am I thinking Manny Koto? I can't remember. Anyway.
And also, like, Archer was the first one to be, like, Archer is, like, the pioneer. Like, I know we have the Geneva Convention now, but, like, does the Geneva Convention apply to aliens that are trying to warp all of space-time? Like, I don't know.
I'm not going to say yes, but here's the point. The Geneva Convention applied to the Taliban. There's a leak.
Okay, then, okay, okay. And this is like a problem with like allegory in Star Trek generally, which is that at the end of the day, the Taliban and the U.S. government are both made up of human beings that like have different cultures, have different values, but do exist on the same planet and are humans.
If the point of the Expanse arc was to interrogate the United States war on terror, you have to commit to the allegory.
I will grant you that as an allegory, season 3 of Star Trek Enterprise is horrific.
Yeah, if you're going to commit to being an allegory for the for American expeditionary warfare in Iraq and Afghanistan, you have to commit all the way. You can't be like, oh, well, they're not real. It's like, no, you've deliberately made a decision.
I mean, that's the real problem.
They weren't ready to have an allegory on that at that time. That would have been anything acceptable to us.
Olivia, there's never been an allegory.
They were in the heat of being, I'm sorry, but insane.
The only good allegory for the global war on terror and that effectively analyzes it is exactly two and only two episodes of the Battlestar Galactica reboot. And the ones you've not watched yet.
Which ones?
They're the ones where the ones where the new Caprica gets like colonized by the Cylons and
Those I'm the, like almost season you, four.
I do think it's telling that like Star Trek Enterprise was considered the liberal allegory at the time. Like at the time, like that's like wild, obviously.
Which is wild considering that Battlestar Galactica literally put our heroes in the position of the terrorists.
Okay, and this is my like, and I know this is not the writer's intent. Like the writers don't get credit for this, but I think the entire story works so much better if you like reverse the allegory that they meant and make the Zindi the United States, because like that makes so much more sense that like they were told by this third party that there were weapons of mass destruction, and so they like did this invasion and they were like planning on completely destroying them based on the idea that like the other party might eventually hurt them. Like I think that's like a much better analogy than saying that like Star Trek are supposed to be the Americans. Star Trek are the Taliban.
That might be the most hard work we'd have to put in to give Star Trek some credit. That's
Can we talk about the
so
gay people
far.
Again?
Oh yeah, let's talk about the gay people.
Yeah, so they fight and
why did they get
thrown around.
You know what's upsetting about this? They're flirting so heavily.
Travis
and
gets
I'm being,
thrown around.
And I can't, you know, have the level of delusion to think that Berman's going to give me anything. They're just going to stress me out for another couple of hours.
Jennifer, they did give us something. Anthony Montgomery took his shirt off.
That was nice. I like that. I like when he
was great.
On the ground and he made that big noise. That was good for me.
That was great. That was great.
That slap of his thigh. Slap. You know?
The flap. Tucker had his ass slapped. That was fun.
Oh, sexual harassment in the workplace yet again.
T'Pol is nervous and can't concentrate properly.
Nervous is not the word I would use.
He's
jealous.
Fired up.
And then sorry, I forgot that Archer literally says we're going to have to bend a few Essex here, which is how one ends up in front of the Hague Criminal Convention. Anyway, then we have Trip Tucker. We have T'Pol doing neuro pressure on Cole, which is
the most uncomfortable scene.
It's a professional. This is like a professional attempt to fail the Bechdel test.
No, it's not. It's not even that. It's that he wanted the little girl on girl action. I know how Berman's mind works. Okay, he wanted to replicate the scenes with Trip and the other woman, and he was like, "What if it was a free?"
Also, to be clear, it does not pass the Bechdel test because even if they're not specifically using his name, they are always talking.
No,
about
I said that. I said it was a deliberate attempt to fail the Bechdel test.
Oh, gotcha. I apologize.
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, and then he's got nice arms, which causes T'Pol to fuck up her shoulder.
Well, and also, you know, it ties up the narrative bow of the fact that the reason they had to have a reason for T'Pol to find out that Trip was doing neuro pressure on Amanda. Like, they had to have a narrative reason for her to know about that.
No, that's literally just because
Flux. So they decided
tells her
that she was fucked up.
Yeah.
Flux, anyway, but Flux only knows because she has the headache and comes in because he's doing it wrong.
That's true, yeah.
Which is madness. Why is he Why is he doing a medical procedure on someone else anyway? What is this?
I will
He's
say,
flirting. He's
I
taking
think
his flirting sessions from one girl to another.
I will say it again. I don't really want to give the writers like full credit for this, but I do think a lot of T'Pol's actions in season three in particular make sense once you know that she's addicted to space heroin.
Who?
That's like giving her T'Pol's addicted to a drug that's giving her extra emotions.
Huh.
Good for her.
So, it tracks for me that as someone who was not used to emotions and suddenly has them and doesn't have anyone other Vulcans to process them with, that she's like doing stupid shit like giving her crush spinal injuries by pressing too hard. That tracks for me.
So we're
For someone that's
cool with
feeling
war
jealousy for the
crimes, and
first
we're
time in
cool
their
with
life.
paralyzing our rival, our lover's rival.
I'm not saying I'm cool with it. I'm saying it makes narrative sense in both situations.
Yeah. You know, and then what do we get? We get some more torture.
More torture.
The guy
Do we
bathing.
Learn anything from the torture? Really?
No, we don't, because torture doesn't work.
And that's a lesson that they maintain.
We learn that he's transdimensional, but that's which is great. Then we find out that Trip finds out that T'Pol spoke to the organ donor clone.
I love Star Trek.
And then we find out that the organ donor clone, that Trip Tucker is jealous of the organ donor clone because at least the organ donor clone had the guts to tell T'Pol what he thought.
Just give Trip a break.
So T'Pol snogs him and then takes off her clothes.
I feel like you're really blowing through this scene when what it really needs is like a second by second breakdown. Because, okay, listen.
You want to know, we want to, it's the way
I'm
the camera pans out
enough to
and
break
we get
that
down. Top of the butt shot.
Did you know that top butt was cut off in the USA?
Oh my gosh.
They zoomed in to
that's not
the
true.
Oh, well.
That's not true.
It.
That's not true.
I'm sure Berman would fight for his
maybe
life.
Maybe on a
original
podcast, maybe on network. Maybe on network,
original,
but not on cable.
Oh no, on UPN, it was cropped, so you didn't see her ass. And then it was shown as original in Canada and on the DVD release and in syndication.
I saw it in syndication, so I saw full ass. That's why I picked this episode. This, like, 2 minute scene.
Oh, well, they cut
has
it because
haunted
it was
me for years.
Oh, Memory Alpha says they cut it because it was 10 days after Janet Jackson's boob slip.
What the fuck?
Oh, that makes sense. That was a real cultural moment for
yeah,
for
you're,
us.
You, despite everything with your country, you are still very weird about about television nudity.
What?
We're terrified of titties.
Oh, Jesus.
Like, we're fine with like a tit right into, we're terrified of areolas. That, like, you know. But yeah, so here's the thing, is Trip T'Pol was Baby's first ship. It was the first like adult, like that wasn't like a little cartoon character that I wanted to guess. I guess that my first would technically be Zuko and what's her name? Katara from
You're a
Avatar.
Terrible
Those were my I was 12, so maybe you could calm down. I've now seen the light and realized my mistake. The real
That's what I thought. That's what I thought. I have an agenda and I'm maintaining it, even subconsciously.
No, I completely agree that that would be have been terrible. I liked it at the time because Katara was the girl that I related to, and I also thought Zuko was hot. So you can see how that happened.
That's fair. Zuko is hot.
Yeah, exactly. But as far as like a grown-up TV show I was watching, it was the first time where I'm like, I want these two characters to get together. I think it'd be really cute if they kissed. And then they kissed. They kissed. And
at
not
what
only
cost?
Did they kiss, I got to see Tushy. I got to see some Tush. And I love everything about this scene. Okay. So first of all, the reveal that the reason that this conversation is happening at all is because the organ donor clone that they grew to save Trip's life came to her to be like, I think I have a crush on you. Incredible. Great narrative. Number two, the fact this is happening when, and like the fact that they set up at the beginning of the series, they have them go through like nearly a full season of just vaguely pressing on each other naked before this scene happens. So, like, the tension has been building up.
Building up like water slow boiling.
Yes. And like the reason for the like naked massaging to happen in the first place is because Trip has PTSD nightmares about his dead sister from 9/11. Also, incredible writing.
Insane.
And like the back and forth between Trip and T'Pol were like, he's like, that sounds like jealousy. And she's like, I don't experience jealousy. And then he admits, and like the way that they mirror their conversation back and forth, incredible. The way that Trip's dumb. Connor Trainor is so good at looking like the most sweet dumb you've ever seen. Just like nothing going on upstairs but a heart of gold. He's so good at it. And the way he's just like, what the hell just happened here? It lives in my head every day of my life.
What's that accent? You sound like you're a young Sheldon or something. Jesus.
I can't do accents. And then the way that he is still on his knees and then she stands up and like the specific like cheap satin fabric of her robe, like everything about the scene, the fact that he's like looking up at her, like I've lost my mind. I was like 13 when I saw this and I was like so into it. And I was like, this was my heterosexual awakening. You know what I mean? And they kiss, and like, not just like after they sleep together, and like, this is skipping ahead, but like when they see each other the next day and he's like, we should talk about this. Like, incredible.
In between, of course, the phasing alien literally walking around the ship like a fucking.
That's not important.
What's that important are the series of nude shots, John.
Yeah, but also, you know what else you've missed in doing in cutting across? You've missed Malcolm and Hayes having the most erotic sparring match and fight I've seen outside of.
I'm sorry, match. The way that he yeeted himself at him was absolutely batshit. Star Trek needs to be taken down for that shot alone.
The fact that they keep doing it into the hallway is like insane.
You know, I've read a lot. I'm currently having a Zuko soccer face. It's still going, for those who remember before the break. I've read a lot of fanfics that start like this. They all have different endings, though.
Better endings? Happier endings?
We're gonna sit on that word happy ending for a bit, Olivia. We're going to sit on that, and then we're going to move on, because I don't want to be sick. And also, we're approaching, like, the 50-minute mark, so, you know, I'd like the...
How does this episode even wind down? There's no plot. It's me being this episode absolutely has appalled no by plot. The attraction between Hayes and Malcolm. Nude shots everywhere.
This episode is an AO3 fic. It has no plot. It has a series of sequences, most of which involve cutting away from sex because the teenager didn't know how to write it.
I believe it ends with Trip being like, we should talk about this. And the fact that T'Pol basically calls him her little science experiment.
That like, was actually sad.
The objectification of Trip Tucker, let's talk about it.
That made me upset for him for real. I was like, oh, sweetheart, I'm so sorry. She doesn't mean that.
Like, honestly, she was stone cold for that. And like the fact that like the like classic gif of her sipping her tea is from that scene absolutely kills me.
Yeah.
Like, look at that,
just know if you've ever used that that gif to mean like, you know, sipping tea because of the truth that she is saying is we boned.
Trip is now her boy toy. That's the truth.
Yeah, she says that. She's like, oh, it was an experiment on human sexuality. Now I've gathered my data. Thank you so much. She doesn't even thank him. I don't think. Like, imagine if immediately after someone, they just pull out a clipboard and start writing down numbers. Like, that is essentially what she did to this man. And also, it's not true. Like, she loves him.
Exactly. And if he wasn't so stupid, he would see that. So you know what? It's Trip's fault again. It's back to him.
I actually think it was progressive that they showed that torture doesn't work. So think about that.
I mean, they do electrocute the guy on the way through, so.
I mean, they electrocute him because he's about to destroy the entire ship.
Yeah,
that's I think true. That's fair.
That's fair enough. It's nothing. It's a problem with most, like 60% of like the Expanse arc. Nothing happens.
It's filler, wasn't it? Just like some sexy old filler.
But that brings me back to my original point. Was I think it struck a good balance because when you say nothing happens, yeah, because they were just like Star Trek episodes. They were just like Monster of the Week episodes that were like using the Expanse as their setting. But they were just, you know, problem of the week episodes. And like of the like, I think there was like 24, 25 episodes of the season. Like of those, like 10 to 12 are plot relevant. And the other like 14 are just, you know, hijinks.
I mean, that's the problem, is that like if you have a standard Monster of the Week episode, all the plot threads have to be resolved in those 50 minutes.
I'm not saying this is a good episode. That's not what I'm saying. That's why I brought it to you.
No, it's...
This is a poorly written episode, front to back.
It's a really poorly written episode, and I thought Hayes and Malcolm had more chemistry than Tripp and T'Pol. I'm sorry, Genevieve. I'm sorry, 12-year-old.
No, they did.
Just because it's true, you think you just say things?
100%. I mean, honestly, the Tripp and T'Pol, the final combination of their love was a distraction from the true... attraction
the special.
And at the end of the day,
we're going to call it the special relationship.
Yeah, a special relationship. Beautiful.
I mean, my main counterpoint is I have no opinion about Hayes and B hate Malcolm, and I like both Tripp and T'Pol, so I'm interested in what happens to them.
You see, now I'm wondering whether you could do a AO3 AU fic, which is Red, Right, and Royal Blue with Hayes and Malcolm.
Oh. I quit for that. I quit for that comment alone.
I don't want to have that in my mind. Someone should read it.
Red, White, and Royal Blue is the book is a war crime. The film, I'm sure it's fine.
It can't be fine.
I mean, we do know for a fact that the Royal Navy still exists, which presumes that a royal family still exists in Star Trek Enterprise.
My joke of Edge of Midnight, the royal family does exist, they just live in Canada, because it is functionally easier to abolish the royal family in England than it is in Canada.
You know, the runners-up always get a little bit obsessive.
Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, Harbinger, Harbinger.
Solid 3 out of 10.
Solid 3 out of 10, yeah.
And the entire 3 points to T'Pol's ass.
I will give all the points to the lunge that Malcolm
does. Now we have to do, the trip knit score. I think I'm going to give it a fat hot 6, simply for how erotic Hayes and Malcolm were together.
That was the shining jewel. Yeah,
I hate Malcolm. I hate Malcolm so much. He pisses me off so much. The idea that he was even, like, sexually fulfilled at all makes me sick. No.
There was more... There was more frustration and edging in that.
I hated that I had to see it.
Does that hatred convert to tripness, Genevieve?
It's out of 5?
Out of 10.
Out of 10.
Out of 10, okay. Out of 10 tripness. I'll give it a 6.
Olivia?
That's how many nipples we got to see.
I am in support of, what should I call them, Halcom? I'm going to say...
Stop it.
4 trip nips, because I was only mad at the sort of montage of sex scenes that were taking me away from the true stars of the show.
Not the torture, not the war crimes. That was fine.
Meh. Classic.
We've all
classic.
Classic Trek.
Who's among us as Star Trek captains hasn't committed a little war crime?
As a treat.
Weirdly, Jim Kirk. I think Jim Kirk might be the only captain who has not committed a crime, who has not broken the Hague Convention.
Okay, well, he's a bit of a HR nightmare, so let's, you know.
They were also a lot closer to the writing of the Geneva Convention.
What?
And this is like a, I said that as like a shit post thing, but like, I do think that like, the politics of Next Generation, of, not the, the politics of the original series are so like firmly influenced by the fact that it was written less than 20 years or approximately 20 years after World War II. And that's like so prevalent and like so very clear in a way that like obviously like Next Generation and then the original series have the same opinion on World War II and the Holocaust, but they have very different emotions because it, for one, it was what their parents did, and for one, it was what they did. And so
it's abundantly clear to me from the writing of the original series that everyone in that writer's room has lost a loved one.
Mm-hmm. What I had said was they're a lot closer to the Geneva Convention, so it's a lot more present in their minds.
Yeah,
the reasons for it are very clear.
Yeah, whereas when you get, of course, to Strange New Worlds and Under the Cloak of War, the Geneva Convention is more of a vibe that somebody else does.
Mm-hmm.
We will do that episode of I Quit Star Trek. Trust me, guys. I am reserving it for a special occasion.
The War Criminal Special?
The War Criminal Special.
You should do a War Criminal Month. All the world criminals.
We won't survive that. We would not survive. That would be true torture, and it would be.
That would be fitting. It would be fitting of War Criminal Month for us to. What is international?
Off the top of your head, how many war crimes? Or I'll put it this way: how many in how many episodes does Archer commit a war crime? I think like five.
I think it's seven.
Seven.
I think there's five in The Expanse and two in like season one and two.
In season one, he's committing war crimes? I didn't notice that.
I think there's at least one moment in which Archer feigns surrender and then fires on somebody, which is an explicit war crime.
Well.
Is it a war crime if the other side hasn't agreed to it?
Yes. Under the Geneva Convention, yes. If the acting party commits a crime.
Does the Geneva Convention apply in space? Okay, that's a question I have.
Actually, you know what?
That's a question, legitimate question. That's not me like being a piece of shit.
I'm 90% sure that the Outer Space Treaty, which bans combat and conflict in space and territory in space, sort of transposes the rules of the Geneva Convention into space.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, the idea of the Outer Space Treaty is that there should be no conflict in space. But I think the assumption is that if there was conflict in space, it would imply that there is legal territory in space. And if there's legal territory in space, the Geneva Convention applies. But the Geneva Convention applies. Because the Geneva Convention applies in international waters, so therefore it applies in space. I think that's the logic.
Do you think the Klingons would like the Geneva Convention?
No, I feel like they'd end up signing it. Well, here's the point, though. We know that they sign an equivalent of it, because in Star Trek VI, they're complaining about interstellar law. So we know that they sign some equivalent of a Geneva or Hague Convention, or at least an international maritime code. We know that they subscribe to a body of interstellar law, so presumably there is a Geneva Convention.
All right.
There's no way that they're adhering to that. I'm sorry. There's just no way.
No, signing up, here's the point. Nazi Germany signed the
Geneva. I mean, America doesn't apply to the Geneva Convention now. Like, no one is applying the Geneva Convention in the year of our Lord 2022.
I should remind you of the Nazi Germany signed the Geneva Convention. So, like, then again, Imperial Japan did not sign the Geneva Convention, which is massively reflected in their conduct of the Second World War.
That tracks.
My favorite thing is when the Geneva Convention says you can't do something to people in war, and America's like, yeah, but we can do it to our citizens, though, right?
Oh, it is explicitly said that there was an American, I can't remember what congressional act it is, that if an American citizen is extradited to The Hague, the United States Congress reserves the right to invade the Netherlands.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you try to extradite a U.S. general to The Hague, the U.S. reserves the right to send the Navy SEALs to spring them.
And if you don't like it, maybe you should have built the nuclear bomb first, so...
Thank you, Oppenheimer.
Thank you, Oppies.
You're welcome.
You were shagging from Oppie Bobs.
You were shagging communists and created the New World Order. Neither which worked out for you. And on that delightful note, you can find us on Twitter at @QuitStarTrekPod.
Did we officially quit? We haven't quit.
Yeah, Olivia, we quit.
I don't quit. I saw true love fall between a depressed British man.
Thank you.
And his bestie.
I started the end spiel, Olivia. There's no going back now.
Well, I'm telling you that I saw true love form between someone who is basically a sand of personality, and I believe in Love because of this episode.
Genevieve, are you quitting?
I can't quit Enterprise, you know? Never quit. Never die.
That's worse than my answer. I'm
putting it in the fucking spreadsheet. There we go. No, we did not quit. That's our first no since December 2022.
Our power.
You're welcome. Great.
Yeah. But yeah, as I said before, I was interrupted.
Rightfully.
You can find us on Twitter at Quit Star Trek Pod. We will be on Blue Sky as soon as I can be asked to sort that. You can email us at iquitstartrek@gmail.com. You can support us on our Patreon, though I'd recommend waiting till we put some Patreon content out. But until then, thank you, Genevieve, for coming back for the return. It was very nice to see you and talk about, get a blow-by-blow breakdown of Trip Tucker having sex.
You're welcome.
Great. I've been John.
I've been Olivia.
And I've been Genevieve.
And I'm editing this episode, so good night.
Are you? No, you're not. Bye.